You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
It is. What's up? And welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host, Rafe Hewson, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. It's been a minute, I feel like, since I've done one of these. There's been a lot going on. I've been all over the place, and sometimes it's just hard to wake up and actually do it. For example, last weekend when I stood this gentleman up, but he is a class act and he had no problem getting on the phone despite having a show tonight. It's the one and only, one of the hottest, I think, up-and-coming wrestlers out of Perth, West Australia. It's Elijah Henry. How are you, my man?
I'm doing good. Bit tired, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting up at crack of dawn to chat some bullshit.
I woke up like 3 minutes before this.
I could tell. I could see your hoof and cereal as we were getting everything powered up.
I got gym session, then I'm off to Willerton Stadium for tonight for a big show.
Absolutely. And the big show you talk about is EPW. This is the big end of year show, isn't it? The old RA show.
It is. It's our 23rd, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Makes me younger than the company.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of people mad. which I love. I think everyone's a bit juiced for it. Definitely excited to see Taylor Jacobs and Jimmy die.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Absolutely. He's referring to, for anybody that doesn't know.
Oh yeah.
and it's not up online with the dude stuff, but Tyler Jacobs, who has been a part of the company that I'm involved with, Dude Where's My Ring, and really is one of the foundations of Perth wrestling, one of the first wrestlers in Perth, and kind of the guy that carried hardcore in Perth, West Australia for a very long time, is retiring. He's having his last match. So he had his last match at Dude, Where's My Ring when we all hung out like 2 weeks ago, a week ago when we did the last show, which will be
where I beat him.
Where I beat his
brains in.
Where Elijah Henry beat him within an inch of his life. And then now he's in a essentially unsanctioned match, hardcore match. They're going to take it as far as they can against James Hartness tonight. Massive respect to Tyler Jacobs and, huge thank you to everything he's doing. But you are also in that match and you have a big day planned. So we'll get this cranking for you I'm not taking up your whole day and you're not missing anything. So when I do this, I always run the first question, and that is, when you think back to what got you into wrestling, what first exposed you to wrestling, who were some of the first faces that stood out to you and really started getting you invested?
I think it's pretty like a simple answer. Mm-hmm. I started playing SmackDown versus Raw with like a friend.
Oh yeah.
That was my first introduction to wrestling.
Yeah.
And then eventually we go up. I go into like a JB Hi-Fi and I was like, I want to watch some wrestling. Like, I want to watch some actual wrestling. So we pick up Royal Rumble 2007, which I've still got on tape.
Yeah.
It's sitting in a box somewhere, but I've still got it. And I remember watching Umaga and John Cena and how bloody that was. And I was like, fuck, this shit's cool. I think I'm alive for now. And then it just kind of developed from there into by the time I was like 10, I was a real smart.
Yeah, okay.
And was really like, oh yeah, Ring of Honor. Like, I'm not kidding, right? I was like, let me know who Bryan Danielson is.
Bro, I didn't even know, and obviously I'm like 20 years older than you or something like that, but I didn't know what Ring of Honor was until I was like in my mid-30s, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking, like genuinely, I was on my 10th birthday, Bless my mother. She funded all of my. I probably owe her thousands of dollars.
No, she's your mother. You get cashed out. That's how it works.
She inhibited this obsession with pro wrestling that still stands to this day. But she was like, "Yeah, I'll get you a really nice birthday present." Uh-huh. And obviously, I didn't understand what currency was or at the time of 10 years old. Uh-huh. So I ended up having I ordered 10 Ring of Honor DVDs.
Wow.
And it was $186, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was USD.
Uh-huh.
And then she checks her bank statement and it's $300. And she's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" And I'm like, "Trust me, it's all going to pay out." And then
again, 10 years old when you
yeah.
So did she kind of sign off on it thinking it was 180 Australian and didn't realize that it was US?
Yeah. And mind you, we weren't the richest family.
Sure.
We were going through it. Yeah. But so she, bless her, I've still got all of those DVDs that I ordered.
That's sick.
They're still in the prize collection, but guys like Danielson, McGuinness, Steam Generico, that final battle 2010
mm-hmm.
is some of my favorite wrestling that I've ever watched.
Yeah.
But all of those guys kind of, I was like, wow, I think wrestling is really cool. But yeah, I was never really a big, I guess, fed mark.
Yeah, sure.
I'm still not.
I mean, obviously, internet would have been quite a bit more prevalent for you. I grew up where we didn't start getting the internet until I was in year 12. I grew up in Geraldton, so we're a little bit behind anyway. But I'm year 11, year 12, we start having digital media classes and I can browse the internet and I can load up WWF.com and watch QuickTime videos that are buffered of Hardcore Holly and shit. You know what I mean? It was but you're obviously growing up in a time when you can. So how did you find independent wrestling in the US when you were that young so quickly? Was it just browsing wrestling and things like that or Googling whatever?
I was a big I want to know these people's shoot names for some reason.
Uh-huh.
So I would search them up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And then obviously I would read through some of their stuff and
And again, so that means that you also kind of knew that it was fake very early on as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still real to me.
Damn it. Well, fake is the wrong word. Predetermined is the word. But what I mean by that is when you're a little kid, I for a long time, I guess when I was a small child, thought it was real, to a certain point, you know what I mean? And maybe suspected kind of stuff. But you were who are the actors behind the performance, you know?
I was given the Iggy quite early on.
Mm-hmm.
I think from my older sister, actually, she ruined it for me.
Oh, okay.
And we had this big car trip where I was like, "No, you're so wrong. It's real. It's real." And then I went home and I was like, "Is WWE fake?" And it was all these YouTube videos of yes, it is. You were dumbass.
And also by the time, again, that you're getting into it, internet exists, podcasts exist, things like that, shoot interviews are happening, all that stuff. Whereas when I was a kid, there was none of that, you know? So when I got out of wrestling for it, kind of ironically, the way I found it was sort of the same as you, but of the time. So I had a friend lend me I think it was Super Nintendo Royal Rumble or something like that. One of the video games, but on a way earlier system on NES or Super Nintendo. And then I also wanted to kind of find it and I traded a magazine or something with a kid in school.
Yeah.
And then I went, I need to go do it. But we had things like Blockbuster Video and Video Easy, whereas you guys had JB Hi-Fi. You know? And so then I went and rented them and got into it. But it wasn't until I got back into it, my life went on. I was in a band for a long time. I didn't have time for it. And when I got back into it, when I was older, kind of around the time that you were getting into it as a kid, I guess, which is crazy, but I could then look behind the curtain that I hadn't never seen before. So then I could devour podcasts and I could listen to interviews like this one we're having now and start to understand it a little bit more. And I think I fell more in love with wrestling when I started to understand how it worked a little bit. You know what I mean? I wasn't like disappointed. I wasn't like, I wish I was real. I was like, this is even cooler.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, I don't know. Like, I think the way it came to me of like wanting to seek out more wrestling was, I think I was just tired of WWE.
Yeah, sure.
And that's me at like 9.
Such a grizzled veteran at 9, like, oh, this fucking.
The Raw, the guest host Raws just aren't doing it for me. Like, you seek out different stuff.
And I mean, to be fair, in that era, like that 2007, you know, kind of real John Cena heavy era and things like that, that was part of the reason why I dropped off it, you know. And so I could see you being like, this is very repetitive. I'm watching 3 hours of this and it's like,
And I still, like, obviously I still thought like some of it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought the punk stuff was good. Mm-hmm. I obviously have a love for Bryan Danielson. Even at that time, I was like, wow, this guy's really good
and
should get pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me seek out more stuff. Mm-hmm. And then coming to understand the indies a bit more, like, I knew a bit about Japanese wrestling, but only like because I've heard, like, oh, these guys. Like, Samoa Joe went over there for a tour, which I didn't know was called a tour at the time.
Yeah.
It was just like he was just doing a couple shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, I just ended up like kind of falling in love with Ring of Honor and that time period, especially that 2006 to like 2008. I just like loved it. And then I had like a weird obsession with like deathmatch wrestling for a little bit, in which I still kind of hold to this day of like, I do love the art of deathmatch wrestling if it's done well.
Sure.
So all you American deathmatch wrestlers can get fucked because you're not good. I'm going to make a lot of people mad.
Jesus Christ.
Masashi Takeda is the best deathmatch worker in the world. But yeah, like all those. So I'm like big on like Japanese wrestling death matches.
And, sure, sure. Yeah, I like
especially now. But yeah, that's kind of my vibe of wrestling absolutely. Growing up.
I would say your broad statement of all American deathmatch wrestlers is incorrect because there's some very good ones. And quite a few of which have been on this show. Check it out, Faces and Feels. But there is definitely. You know, there's like an underbelly of averageness, and then there's like elite, you know, the elite performers. Once you were starting to get into this and you know, you're really vibing with wrestling and stuff like that, did you have friends that were into it too so you could kind of show them and that sort of thing? Or was it just like this solo thing for you? Because it was for me. Like, I tried to get some friends into it, but nobody really cared.
It was very much like a solo thing. And it was like, obviously, like, I went to high school and I stopped watching wrestling because I was like, well, this shit isn't cool. And no females would ever like me because I'm watching wrestling.
It's just a tale as old as time, the one you're saying.
Turns out, didn't matter.
Yeah, okay.
eventually I ended up like getting back into wrestling around the time of like year 10. So I only took like 2 years off or whatever. And I just kind of kept it as this like secret. And then eventually, like, I was like, fuck it. It's, to me, it's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there is nothing better than like what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I find it the most interesting thing that I do. And it's probably the most interesting thing that a lot of people come across.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just like, now I'm like, if someone asks me, I'm like, yeah, I'm a pro wrestler who like loves this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I've tried to get a couple of my friends into it. A couple of them are like pseudo into it, but only because I'm wrestling.
Yeah.
So they'll like come to shows and whatnot. And we had a couple of my friends were at Beer Fest.
Yeah. I was also there. It was a very fun day.
Yeah. And they were for their night sessions. And one of my friends who's like super anti-wrestling watched Lucas Fantasia and Hayden Zenith put on just like this flippy boy match. And he was like, holy shit, I didn't know wrestling was this. And I was like, yeah, it can be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be like, it's not necessarily this fake thing. Like, they are, it's legitimately like an athletic competition if we need it to be.
And it's an art form, and every wrestler's a performer, and they've got their own way of telling that story. So you can find somebody for you. You know what I mean? Just because you've seen, I don't know, what he was thinking it was, John Cena, Batista, whatever it may be, that doesn't mean that's what everybody is, you know?
Mm. So, yeah, and I think a lot of people that came to those beer fests and the cutting show that we did, I think it was maybe like an eye-opener for them of like, oh, wrestling isn't just this. It's not for fat virgin losers.
And yes, and Dude, Where's My Ring does that, don't you think?
Like, yes.
Instead of needing to, like, I think it's been really hard for like a lot of you, you know, who were doing stuff like EPW and New Horizon, whatever it may be, because you get somebody to come and you're like, hey, come to our show. It's in a rec center in the middle of nowhere. There's no beers and you've got to sit here with kids and like watch this happen. And that can be like a lot of people, it's a lot of time and effort for somebody to give up that's not really into it. You know what I mean? Whereas if you go, hey, we're over at Seasonal Brewing, we're slinging some beers and we're going to fight it on the floor. They're like, oh, sorry, what? Yeah. And then now I have friends that, like, even if I can't be there, they go to every show, regardless if I'm there, because they're like, it's just a great night out. And I think that in itself has helped Perth Wrestling not only get more people into it, have a show that is, you know, pretty regular that everybody goes to, but then I know there's people that got into it through that who are now going to stuff like the EPW shows.
Yeah.
Because they were into what they saw there. I mean, you and I were talking off mic, like, a mutual friend, you didn't know him before the show. You know, he's friends with people that he'd never been before, and he saw you wrestle and he bought the shirt, and then now he's going to the show tonight because he's like, this is my favorite wrestler. I don't know what wrestling is, but this is my fucking dude, because he's like that into it and enjoyed what you did so much. And I think that's really special that we can offer different things in this city. And I think there was a real pushback for a long time, especially when we first started, being like, what is this shit? This is never going to work here. You know what I mean? And maybe like the kind of older heads didn't get what was being offered and were a bit worried about it. But now, I mean, if they don't think it's helping the scene, they're probably kidding themselves.
Yeah. I'm very much of like, I'm of the mindset of like, I think more wrestling helps, or at least having more places to work for wrestlers.
And able to see it in different ways, because not everybody wants to see it in the same way. Like my friends that go to Dude, and want to watch a beer and see people, you know, fight in a bar, are never going to go to that rec center. They're just not going to do it. Yeah. They, you know, they might come along if I encourage them for a big show or something like that, but they just won't. You know what I mean? So how's it hurting anybody? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, and I think dude shows are like super fun. I think not only for the fans, but for the guys involved. And it's a super creative thing that we do. Like, I know I have the most fun when I'm wrestling at Dude.
Oh, I love that.
Even if I'm not like, wow, these matches are, you know, breaking Dave Meltzer's star ratings.
No, because they're not designed to do that. And it's kind of almost impossible to do that in that setting. But that's not the point. The point is to entertain and have a party and have fun. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it allows, like, I love Dude for that kind of fact of like, the fans are super close. Like, it's this intimate setting. I've always been super attracted in a wrestling sense to intimate settings.
Yeah, same. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's like, again, back to Ring of Honor. Like,
all
of those buildings were packed, 300 to 400 to 600, just crazy rabid wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to see this wrestling. So it made all those matches super hot.
Yeah.
And I feel the same vibe at Dude. Even though there's like, I think we sell like 100, 120 tickets. It feels so enclosed and so packed and so loud. that I'm like, oh, fuck, I love this.
Yeah,
like,
and everybody's having a wicked time. Like, When I first started getting into deathmatch wrestling, I saw deathmatch by accident in Japan for the first time. Went to a Big Japan show and didn't really know what it was, kind of thing. And then it's like 100 light tubes, you know, like fucking Abdullah Kobayashi and the main kind of thing. And then I started looking into it and I watched the Casanova Valentine Vice documentary. Have you seen that?
I think I've heard of it.
I'll send you the link. It's really short. It's like 20, 30 minutes, but it's basically about him running no ring shows in New York and how he sort of got around because the State Athletic Commission there are like, no, you can't run wrestling shows here. You need to have ambulances. You need to do this.
Yeah.
But he started running no ring shows as art shows, essentially.
Yeah. Okay.
He started running them in bars and packing them out. And I was watching them. I was like, I would fucking give anything to go to these shows. This looks so fucking cool. Yeah. I didn't know that X amount of years later we'd be running them in Perth. You know what I mean? Like, and the fact that we're there now and doing that is just so fucking fun to me. Like,
I think the vibe is like always high, even though like a lot of us come in working our shoot jobs.
Yeah.
Coming in tired as all hell. Because a lot of it's like on a Friday.
Yeah.
So we don't get
I'm
that
always
Friday
like,
impressed.
Why is it got to be Friday? Because I'm like fucking, running from work and I'm coming in and I'm loading up my shit and I'm getting in there.
And we're just all tired. And then like, you know, that kind of like excitement to wrestle kind of all hits us.
Well,
the
fans just bring in so much energy. Like when they come through that curtain, when we eventually let them in, like that first, 20 minutes, 30 minutes before like the first match happens.
Yeah.
The place is buzzing. So it's pretty hard to not be pumped by the time it goes up.
And we all hear it we'll come back through the curtain and be like, they're fucking ready to go. Like,
Yeah.
And usually I'm first out, so I'm excited to get all the heat that I need.
That's it. So let's jump a little bit into how you actually started training, hey, because you're obviously a super fan. Once you you're getting to high school, you go, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to embrace it. And to be honest, we all kind of think the same thing. Like, we've got to hide this thing about ourselves. It's a bit nerdy. Not everybody thinks it's cool. I'm here to tell anybody, if you own what you're into and you say it's cool and you wear it on your sleeve, nobody can say shit to you, man. And when you even talk about like female attention and stuff like that, that they also find that attractive and appealing because you're not trying to be anything other than who you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that in itself, confidence is attractive, right? And so just for all you young men out there, so don't be afraid of being a wrestling fan. But so you start doing that and you start owning it. So do you go, fuck it, this is something I love. This is something that I'd love to be a part of. I'm going to seek out training. Is that what happens? Or do you stumble into somebody or what happens?
No, I had like this light bulb moment because I started training in 2018 when I was 16. So I'm 6 years deep now. But we had one of our teachers come in at my school and do this interview, not this interview, but like this lecture to all of us and was like, you know, because I think everybody was deciding on what uni they wanted to go to or what they wanted to do after school. Because we were year 10 at the time, I want to say. No, year 11. So it was like time to make that decision on what we're going to do. And he comes in and he's like, chase your dreams. Like, what is the point of wasting it? And I was like, I had just gotten into Japanese wrestling. Like, I just started watching like New Japan shows and all that. And for some reason, like, I remember sitting there in this lecture hall and being like, oh, fuck, I know what I want to do with my life now. Like, I know where I need to take this. And so I started seeking it out.
Two quick questions before we jump into that.
Yeah.
One, what was your first New Japan match that started pulling you into them?
It was Kenny and Okada. Mm-hmm. And then I watched Kenny and Beretta. And then I think I watched Wrestle Kingdom 12 all the way through.
Yeah, sure. So the first Kenny and Okada?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. One of the greatest matches.
I knew that they wrestled again that year.
Dominion, the next one, Kenny and Okada 2 is my favorite match of all time. The draw was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
I watched that shit live and I was losing my fucking mind live on in my house. And then the second thing was, were you in any way athletic at this point? You're thinking, fuck it, I'm going to chase this. Are you doing sports and stuff at school or are you just a wrestling nerd? Like,
I was playing sports. Like, I've got a soccer background.
Okay.
And I've always been quite like an athletic kid, I guess.
Sure, sure. So you're already somewhat physical, you know? So, okay. So you've kind of, you're not starting from scratch in a sense. You're like, okay, no. I'm athletic. I can begin to move and I can kind of head in this direction.
That definitely helped and translated well over to like the cardio side and the general like getting it. It's something that I also like, I've started helping take trainings and stuff. And it's something that I talk about to people of like, the younger that you start, the probably easier it is to pick up.
Yeah.
Especially if you have like an athletic background, because it's, I don't know, it clicked with me. Like all the stuff clicked with me quite quickly. And then I was like, got to the top of the class pretty quickly. After training with Julian Ward and Taylor King, I'm sure they'll love hearing their names. but those two trained me. I've kind of just developed. And they kind of, especially Jules helped me develop into, I guess, the wrestler I wanted to be now. Mm-hmm. So I credit him the most. That's kind of my starting training.
Absolutely. Well, for anybody that doesn't know, Julian Ward is amazing. Well, both guys are amazing Australian wrestlers. But Julian Ward was, very recently, was over in Ring of Honor and stuff, wasn't he? Because he was trained by Lance Storm and was doing all sorts of stuff in the States.
Yeah, he was one of Lance Storm's last, I'm pretty sure last, like, housing kids that he brought in. Mm-hmm. That was when Jules was 21. So that was...
It was a while ago now, the Lance Storm stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But Jules has like developed into one of the best pro wrestlers in the country.
Absolutely.
Along with Tay and along with Kaz as well, who they were both over in Ring of Honor, jobbing out as they should.
Getting in practice for when they're going to be jobbing to you in the future.
Yes. When I take those tag straps off of them.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like, and I kind of take from those guys as well, even now with my wrestling. But yeah, they're my.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Mm. And so before we got on the line, the other thing that really sort of set you apart and what made you stand out to me when I first saw you, because I wasn't familiar with you before our 1 year anniversary show when you jumped on the Jackrabbit Slim show, which is not online on YouTube yet, guys, but it will be very soon. We're a few shows behind, but we've got a new editor working on. So you'll all get to see that show. Amazing. Chris Weiss, Mikey Nichols are there and you'll see Elijah's debut. That straight away was your style, like a really hard hitting, work rate based style, and you were telling me that like initially that was sort of a little bit of took a little bit of work for you to sort of get that over or have people, I guess, other wrestlers or companies sort of understand what your vision of pro wrestling was as a heel and what you wanted to do, right?
I guess because obviously like I love Japanese wrestling, like a lot of the boys make fun of me for it, but I like to incorporate the style in which I work and the style in which I watch. I don't necessarily think that being this is a real peek behind the curtain, but I don't necessarily think that having, just because you can be this competitive wrestler doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be cheered. Like you can be this competitive, serious wrestler and still get booed because the fans, like, for example, I tell everybody that I meet that's a fan, I say, I'm the best wrestler in this country, and I fucking believe it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, fuck off. Like, can I swear? Sorry, yeah, I've said it.
I think I've said fuck about 20,000 times on this episode already, but yes. If you know me, now you've exposed you've never listened to my show before because you would know.
But yeah, so of course. I'm like, and they're like, oh, why are you being a prick? And I'm like, well, no, because I believe in what I do. Like, I believe that I'm one of the better wrestlers in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's just one of those things of I don't think you necessarily have to be, like, it doesn't necessarily be you have to be a heel and you have to cheat. I think that is such an old school way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very, like, WWE style, and I get it. Like, a lot of people were brought up in that era of watching WWE and then translating that into their style of pro wrestling. But the way I view it is you can be a bad guy and you don't have to cheat. You can just be better than the other person.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, you can have this super competitive closing stretch and then you pick up the win.
Yeah.
And I think that's developed more now as we've gotten more into the decade and as the, like, the 2020s kind of started and throughout the independent boom in the 2010s, I think you saw a lot of, like, guys just being bad guys because the fans just didn't like them.
Yeah.
But they were still good wrestlers.
Yeah.
And they were still able to pick up wins because they were better than the other person. But yeah, I got a lot of, mainly because I'm not someone who enjoys that style of pro wrestling, that sport, like that very heavily sports entertainment style. Sure. Where if you're a bad guy, you have to cheat.
Yeah.
And if you're a good guy, you have to do everything by the rules. Mm. Like, I think there should always be shades of gray in wrestling.
Absolutely.
With some guys obviously being these super bad, use your brass knuckles. And then your good guys being your Sami Zayn's. And
yeah, but it can be everybody because it can be every wrestler can be somebody's favorite wrestler and every wrestler can be somebody's, you know, most hated wrestler. You know, there's going to be different things, but you can definitely present in a way like a super athlete, like aggressive, arrogant, and things like that, but still win. And that in itself can be maddening for fans because it's like nobody can just beat this cunt. Like, how come I can't just fucking see him lose? You know what I mean? And it reminds me, some of my favorite ones, I think I've talked about it, my favorite Ring of Honor rivalry and match was when it was Jay Briscoe, rest in peace, was the Ring of Honor world champion, and he was feuding with Jay Lethal, who was the TV champion at the time.
Yeah.
And the promo package was for awesome because Jay Lethal, who was the heel in this situation, was essentially saying the world title doesn't matter. It's not the number one title in this company. My title is the number one title in the company because I hold it. I am the best wrestler in the company. So this is the best belt. You know what I mean? Like that kind of arrogance. And he's just screaming at the camera. He's like, I'm the best. So this is the best. He's not the best. And like, that's it. That's wrestling all in one. You know what I mean? And I think that's like, that sometimes gets lost in booking and in doing things like that, that really you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It can just be like, I'm the fucking best and that is it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's it. It speaks to people.
Yeah. It's such a, I think it, obviously I take a lot from Japanese wrestling, but like even some of the heels over there, like especially now Gabe Kidd, I think he's
amazing,
doing some really good work. Like, but he's very much like, I am fighting spirit. Like, I love this shit.
Yeah. He's like, and in his mind, he's defending New Japan, right? He's like, all these guys are bastardizing it. I'm the fucking true fucking dojo guy here. Like, I'm telling you right now, my way is the right way. And I think that's a really great slant because, again, all it takes is you get to a certain point and you put him against the right opponent. And if you ever need to do that switch, he's the biggest face in the company. You know what I mean?
But it's the way he goes about it where you're like, oh, shut the fuck up. Like, you know, you're like, we get it. You love fighting spirit. We get it. You love New Japan. Just like just shut your mouth for a bit.
Exactly. And he's doing it on purpose. He's overdoing it to annoy people. You know what I mean? Like,
So it's kind of what I take and what I do with my stuff, I guess. And then obviously I either get my comeuppance or I beat people up.
Yeah.
Which...
You've been doing a lot of beating of people up, so that's pretty good. Now that's awesome, man. All right, then. Well, let's tell people where to find all your bits and pieces so they can start to get up on everything that is Elijah Henry.
I'm just on Instagram. Well, I'm on Twitter as well, but I don't use Twitter.
Yeah, sure.
But it's just Elijah Henry, all one word, PW on Instagram. Go follow me there. I'm sure there's going to be some good content there.
Absolutely. Surely. And then obviously check out EPW Perth, check out Dude West.
And then,
Perth.
Tonight we got EPW Perth at Willetton Stadium. We got Dude Where's My Ring coming back in the new year, and that stuff will all be up on YouTube. EPW will be behind a paywall on Vimeo, but I'm pretty sure Go Time is up on YouTube, which I will be on, and I will put five other people in the ground because I am number one.
There you go. You hear that? Number one. That's it. And Dude has been a little bit behind in getting stuff out, but that's all getting sorted. So I think there's about five shows to go, but there'll be sort of a double one. And then at that 1 year anniversary show, you'll see the debut of Elijah Henry. So that's coming very, very soon. And then he becomes a fixture from then on out. So, dude, absolutely.
They liked me enough to bring me back, which was a shocker.
Well, you've been at every show since then, right? Like, basically. Absolutely.
I went away for a bit and they wanted to bring me back. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I've been back. They loved me against the great George.
Yeah, that was such a good match. It was really enjoyable. Yeah, loved it.
Cool.
Yeah, that is it. Everything you need to know in those places, check it out. I'll put it all in the show notes. My man, I want to thank you so much. Have fun beating people up tonight. I'm sure that's that's what you're looking forward to. And for everybody out there, make sure you check it out. So remember, it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Peace. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Countout Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston. Edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Countout Network and all our sister shows over there at Countout Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G Raver, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform, and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the violent view.
This has been a Countout Podcast. Countout provides a wide variety of bonus content that is right at your fingertips. On the Countout Patreon, our podcasts are creating bonus content exclusively for you, their listener. For only $5 a month, you can watch instant reactions to major shows, watch-alongs, early access to main feed podcasts, some fun goof and gag audio, plus shows from some of the podcaster's outside interests. It's the best way to experience all that the Countout Network has to offer. So head on down to patreon.com/countout to take part in some of the best and most fun content wrestling has to offer. Again, that is patreon.com/countout.